listening to Wake Up Hollywood with Nikki Kalula and Eddie Pence, right here on LA Talk Radio.
This is your host with the most, Nikki Kalula. We're going to jump right into this episode. We have a very, very creative person indeed, guitar luthier, Brian Calhoun. How are you, Brian?
I'm good. It's nice to see you.
Nice to see you as well. And your guitars, I mean, I got to tell you, your guitars are very cherry in the acoustic guitar world. I want to know first, how did you come up with the name Rockbridge Guitars, and how did you fall into this world of making guitars?
Yeah, well, I grew up in Rockbridge County, Virginia, so that was an easy name to come up with. But yeah, I just, you know, grew up in a super musical world. Started taking guitar lessons early on. Was obsessed with guitar, you know, from like middle school, in different bands, you know, different kinds of music. But I had a guitar teacher, this super eccentric guy named Steve Hoke in Lexington. And he was a great teacher, a great musician, but he built instruments as a hobby. And he would build, I don't know if he ever actually built a guitar, but he'd build these like strange things. Like he built a hurdy-gurdy.
And wow.
Yeah. And he built, he did build a guitar because he had a three-necked instrument and a four-necked instrument. He called it the Trimeister and the Quadmeister. A guitar, a mandolin on top. There's like a fiddle on a swivel and then a banjo on the bottom. And he'd play all these things. And I was in high school at this point, and I just thought it was so neat that he would make these instruments. And after every lesson, I'd be like, show me what you're making. He had a tiny little workshop, and he'd be making these things one at a time.
And did he show you how to do the intonation for all these instruments? Because doing those instruments all on one guitar, on one instrument, would be that alone would drive me crazy. You know what I mean?
Yeah. He didn't really show me how he was doing it at that time. It was just more of this. I was looking at it. I couldn't believe that somebody could actually make something like that. And then when I was a senior in high school, I needed to take an independent study, and I decided I was going to build a mandolin. And I just got a book like how to build a mandolin and sort of started through that. And then Lexington or Rockbridge County, where I grew up, there's a couple instrument makers, and there was a mandolin builder there named John Schofield. And again, he built mandolins. It wasn't a full-time gig, but he built like 100 mandolins. And I got a very informal apprenticeship with him where I'd go like old school, you know, sweep floors, sand on his stuff. And then at the end of the day, you know, this is just on weekends, he'd like show me a little thing on my mandolin. And that first mandolin took me like a year to build. And it was, you know, pretty crappy.
Did you do the supplies and stuff, or did you kind of like go and pick out the woods that you wanted for, you know, the instrument?
It was, I mean, that was just piecing stuff together from like scraps from, you know, his shed kind of thing, you know, no nice woods. And then there was this other guy there that built violins, and I started working with him. Wow. So I was building mandolins and violins for a long time there. And then I got into the, like the inlay work, the artwork on the guitar. And I started doing inlay for a banjo company as one of my first jobs, you know, right out of high school. But I didn't play any of those instruments. And so, you know, I think I built 12 mandolins, and I'd finish one, and I'd, you know, I knew a few chords, but I'd have other people try them out. And then it just didn't make sense where I spent all my other time playing guitar. This was still a hobby. I wasn't trying to do it for a living yet. But then this other guy, Randall Ray, who was older than me, I used to go out to his place and play music when I was in high school. We played bluegrass music. He was building guitars, and I started talking to him. He's been like one guitar a year, but they were like super nice.
Wow.
And one day we just sort of talked about collaborating on a guitar, and that first guitar, I just loved it because it was something I'd built, but then I could play it. I could actually, you know, and I got hooked. So we started building guitars together, and I had this nice vintage acoustic guitar that my parents had given me for a high school graduation present. And then I realized I was like playing this guitar Randall and I had built. I just like playing it more, and I just thought, man, you know, other people will like these things too. And I went to him, you know, he's like 20 years older than me. I was a kid basically, and I said, you got to quit your job and we got to start this business. He was you're crazy, nobody can build guitars for a living. But you know, that's kind of when it all started.
And do you remember the woods that you used for that first guitar? Do you remember what the soundboard was?
Back then, I mean, we were mainly building guitars with mahogany back and sides, and actually cedar tops, which I still really like, although we don't use it as much these days. They were all dreadnoughts because we were building like bluegrass guitars. So we did a few cedar top guitars, and then we were using Adirondack spruce tops and like building like, you know, loud sort of bluegrass canon instruments. And that was our whole market for the first several years. And I'd go around to bluegrass festivals, and I was in like different bands and stuff. I was a kid. So I'd go up to these great players, you know, a bluegrass festival. It's not like going to Lollapalooza. I mean, backstage is just a little ribbon. You can walk back there.
One year in Barstow, and I went to it. It's awesome though, because everybody sits in lawn chairs and you listen to nonstop bluegrass like all day. And it's like sitting at a giant campfire. It's the best. I think it's one of the best musical experiences you can have.
Yeah, it's so great. And all those musicians were usually like playing, you know, jamming with each other. It's a big jam music. It's not like everybody knows the songs and they sit down and they play together. But anyway, I'd go find these guitar players and say, you know, hey, check out this guitar my friend and I made. And you know, they'd play it, and sometimes they'd be like, let me take it back where I can hear this thing. And we ended up getting a handful of really good, like, you know, at least in that circle, well-known bluegrass guitar players.
Who were some of those names? Because I love that whole scene.
Well, like one of the very first guys was a guy named Larry Keel, who's from the area. And I mean, he's just a beast of a guitar player. I mean, this is, you know, way before bluegrass like hit mainstream, like Billy Strings kind of stuff.
Yeah, exactly.
But he was just killer. And then there's this thing called the National Flat Picking Championship, where all these guys would go play. And I got a lot of like those contest winners. Wow. And then guitar players like in bands, like the guitar player in the Dixie Chicks and Ricky Skaggs, and you know, a lot of just really, really incredible musicians.
You know, even the worst bluegrass player can shred more than any other genre of music. It's the craziest thing. I mean, you'll see people sitting on their doorsteps or like, you know, in, you know, just like a little park or whatever, and they are shredding like you have never imagined somebody that could play. And then you're like, oh, do you do this for a living? They're like, nah, I'm a farmer, I'm this and that. And it's just like, it's crazy. It's the most insane art form, because you have to be so good. And I really would put the worst bluegrass player up against any musician, and I know that they'll out-shred them.
It is the kind of thing, if somebody has not heard bluegrass before, and then you hear a bluegrass guitar player, you're like, how in the world do they do that?
Right.
But, you know, as a not very good bluegrass guitar player, I was a lot better when I was 16. You know, I started to feel like, man, every song sounds the same. Like, you know, but these days there's so many people out there that are just incredible. And it's cool right. to see it like become mainstream. Where back then, I mean, I went to Berklee Music School for a semester. And when I was up there and I'd tell people I played bluegrass, everybody asked, is that the name of a band? Like, nobody had even heard of it.
Really?
Yeah.
That's crazy. And you know what? The cool thing about bluegrass music as a genre. It's really kind of it's a lot like blues in the sense that like you learn licks from people and mm-hmm. what you hear is what you end up start playing. And like, you know, you start gravitating towards what somebody's influenced by as far as a style or a sound in, mm-hmm. In the licks, you know what I mean? And it's like, you hear it. Sometimes it's like in the moment, you know, it's like,
yeah, I mean that it, most of it is. And that's what was so great about that style of music to me. Is, you know, people will sort of know, like there's a lot of standards that people
right.
know.
Right.
But then even if you don't know the standards, like the songs are pretty simple. You know, you can pick them up by ear, right? There's like a sort of a standard structure to the way that it works. And so what happens, I mean, the concerts are great and all, but the beautiful part of it is like literally the front porch stuff, the living room stuff, where you get people who have never played together and then they know, you know, a handful of songs in common, and it's improvisation. You know, you start with a melody and you're playing it, but then you like improvise off that melody. I mean, Billy Strings does it as well as anybody, and Molly Tuttle, oh my gosh, there's people out there that are incredible today that are doing it, but you know, there's so many people like back where I grew up that are just world class, but you know, nobody's ever going to hear them,
which is a shame because it's like such a great genre of music and art form, and the mm-hmm. skill set, like these players, they have to be able to play. And it's like, you know, you're talking about these licks, and let's be honest, these guitar licks are faster and executed better than even metal guitar, any of those kind of like fancier, kind of bigger guitar riffs, but because it's on an acoustic guitar and mm-hmm. it's done at a level and precision that is faster than, you know, what a lot of players can do on an electric guitar. So mm-hmm. I have way more respect for a bluegrass player for that alone, because it's like, I hear all these players, I'm like, man, all these guys can play and they jam. They really jam. And then it's also the other thing too, is like, sometimes they don't know like, oh, form of, you know, like they're not thinking that capacity, they're just thinking about what they're hearing, and they're just like throwing it back. I watched mm-hmm. this interview of Billy Strings saying, yeah, I wanted to kind of like learn song form and chord structure. And I'm like, when you hear him play, you think that there are no holes in, you know, his music knowledge because of what he can play. Mm-hmm. But the great thing about that is it's all about what they're listening to and how they're listening to each other. And you have to listen because you're in this small group, all acoustic instruments most of the time, very lightly amplified, if any amplification at all. And the real true ones are not amplified. And it's just, mm-hmm. you know, they're sitting on a porch or they're just in a semicircle and they're just having a discussion with their instruments. You know what I mean? Yeah. So it must have been a great honor to see these great players playing your instruments and giving you feedback on
it. It was really great. And we got a lot of feedback, and, you know, when you're building for bluegrass guys, you're building guitars with what you call headroom, which right. means like there's different ways that a guitar, when people will say, I want a loud guitar, there's kind of like different ways to look at that. Right. You know, some guitars you play softly and you hear it. Headroom is like when you drive it, every, you know, good guitar player knows that there are a lot of guitars out there that might sound good when you play them soft, but when you play hard, it's like it stops. It doesn't have any more to give. And right. when you're building for bluegrass, you know, since a lot of the music is not amplified, you're playing with much louder instruments. I mean, banjos and fiddles and mandolins are all way louder than guitars.
Right.
So when you go to play that lead, like you need to be able to dig in and build a guitar with headroom. And so that's kind of where we got going, was building bluegrass guitars for all those first years. But
did you adjust that with the action? A lot of people do that with the action just to give it more resonance so the string can reverberate a little bit. How did you make adjustments? Most wood?
I mean, we had like a standard action we'd build to. I mean, it, you know, since the guitars that we were building from, we were really lucky, and even early on, they were custom built. So we're building them for four individual musicians. So each one, you know, you're kind of talking to the artists. Some people like really high action in that genre, but you know, other people like more normal or, you know, lowish action. But yeah, it was, that was fun. We don't build as many, you know, bluegrass guitars these days. We've kind of switched clientele, I guess, to just guitar players in general, which was, which was partly a conscious decision back. So, and I think those early years with the bluegrass, like, let us really become, like, find our own thing, because like Martin guitars are extremely traditional in bluegrass music. And so early on, what we kept getting is we'd have people say, "Hey, I love your instruments, but can you make, you know, a copy of like this old Martin?" And it was very tempting to try and, you know, make a reproduction of something, because we were, you know, starting a new business and didn't really have a foothold in it yet. But I'm really glad we basically early on said, no, we can't, you know, this is what we're making. We can build you this. And I think when you're starting something, you know, like instrument building, you have to be your own thing. And it's subtle, you know, it's such a subtle difference. But when you're making something that's subjective, you know, because I'm not going to say our guitar is, you know, hands down better than this guitar, because to somebody else, this guitar might be what they want. But I think by sticking to our guns and saying we're not making replicas, you know, we found our own way to build these things, which is sort of, you know, it's got elements of all the great instruments, vintage instruments, and then a couple little things we've done, and then so much individual attention on each instrument. But by just sort of having our formula and sticking to it, at least we had something different enough that we gave musicians the opportunity to like our instrument, you know, most.
Let's make a footnote. Like, one thing that has to be kind of acknowledged is, you know, with Martin and Taylor guitars, they are throwing out guitars like left and right. When you go to a real luthier that puts the attention to detail, I mean, it's a lot of the luthiers I know, it's like 5 to 10 guitars a month, and that's on the high end, you know. Yeah. How many guitars would you say you do a month collectively with the two of you?
Well, there's four of us now, and it's been my other great friends joined on, I mean, like 15 years ago, and have been with us, and we love it. We're not trying to grow. It's just the four of us,
right?
And we're doing six guitars a month, and they're staggered. So we start six guitars a month, and we finish six other guitars a month.
That's awesome.
Know. Yeah, and this way is great. And we don't have plans. We're not trying to grow. This is it. You know, and it keeps us busy, but we've all got other, you know, other things we dabble in on the side. We like the flexibility it gives us. But yeah, exactly. I mean, if say, for instance, I wanted to start a factory building guitars, I would suspect, you know, if I hired somebody that wasn't a guitar builder and didn't know about guitars, and their job was to sand, you know, the tops,
right,
that I would suspect that I'd say, okay, like, a, you know, our spruce tops average 3.2 millimeters, so run everything to 3.2 millimeters. The advantage of like a small shop, and you know, there's some big companies that are still churning out incredible instruments, so they've figured out their own ways to do it, but the advantage of a small shop is you can have somebody like run two pieces of wood through a sander, and they might have come from the same tree.
Right.
One's going to be a little bit stiffer than the other. Yep. And they can say, okay, this piece of wood, I'm going to take it, I'm going to, you know, do one more swipe, or this piece of wood, I'm going to leave it a little stiff. And you're able to do that on every process, you know, the top, the back, the braces, the you know, every little thing. You've got that decision, that human decision of this is what this piece of wood needs. So that's a, you know, that's one of the really neat things about going with a small, you know, instrument maker.
Well, what's crazy is I fell in love with acoustic guitars maybe 25 years ago, and I started with a Martin guitar, and one of my old roommates had a guitar built by James Goodall, and we were in music school together. And so like I played his guitar, and I was like, man, this is a cut above any guitar I've played. And he was like, man, he makes 5 to 8 guitars a month. Like, he's just a small mom and pop shop, and he makes the best guitars. So I went and, you know, met him at NAMM. And this is what I love. And I'm sure you have these kind of, you know, relationships with your guitars that you make. I said, you know, one of my, you know, college roommates had, you know, he bought one of your guitars. He said, what was his name? And I said, his name was Abe Dirtner. And he said, oh yeah, that was a traditional with the redwood top. I mean, he started listing all this
totally, stuff. Man.
And I was like, man, that just the fact that he knew that level of detail for the instrument and who it's going to and what the player was. I mean, it just like, I was like, this is where it's at when it comes to acoustic guitars. I find guitar luthiers like you guys are like wizards. You guys are musical wizards. It's the truth, because if you know acoustic guitars, just the fact that it's built from a tree and it's woods and it's all these different woods put together that sound and resonate well together, it is like a beautiful art. It's like it's a beautiful art and it's a little bit of a science, but it is just it's nothing that you can get out of a huge guitar, manufacturer. It's not the same. There's a level of precision, detail, handwork. And I talked to him for about 5 years about the guitar I wanted him to make me. And he was always like, this kid's never going to buy a guitar. And then like about maybe 7 or 8 years ago, I called him and I said, I'm ready to do the guitar. And he said, really? I said, yeah. I'm like, let's do this. So we did.
Yeah.
He actually, you'll appreciate this a lot. I asked for a redwood top. I wanted rosewood, Indian rosewood, back and sides. And I said, man, I'd like you to get the most cherry piece of redwood that you can find. And he's like, okay, cool. And so when he sent me pictures of the guitar as it was, being made, he said, we put sinker redwood. And I didn't know what sinker redwood was. And he was explaining the whole thing. I said, this is why you go to guitar luthier. So one of my questions is, how do you choose the woods that you're able to use? And do you go and look and know like, okay, we're going to get these woods, especially because there's so many woods that are now so scarce, Brazilian rosewood, Indian rosewood becoming that. Like, do you have like guitars that you have in mind when you see them? How do you go about getting the woods?
Yeah, I mean, that's another benefit of being small. I can't even imagine having to source woods for, thousands of guitars everywhere. I mean, that becomes a whole thing that I don't really know about. And we're pretty lucky in that, we've made good relationships with guys that find wood for a living. And when we're only building that few instruments, we're able to really look through it and be picky about the woods that we use. Yeah. And also, we've been around long enough and people have heard about us. I've been many times on the receiving end of calls where somebody said, my granddad built guitars as a hobby and he left us with this and was in some picture of this incredible wood. And that's happened a dozen times, some variation of that story. And we've ended up with some really cool, old wood from that. And so it's just, maintaining relationships with the guys that we buy wood. I mean, I trust them now. So if I call and say, hey, I need, 10 Adirondack spruce tops, he knows what we're looking for. It becomes significantly easier. And we've got that with a handful of guys that look for wood. So it's that combined with those lucky sort of breaks of finding, neat things. And then we have our main woods that we go with. And early on, I guess we went through the like, let's have in I need to update the website, 1,000 different woods we can build guitars with, because you can, and you can probably make good sounding guitars with, 1,000 different woods. But we've pinned it down. I mean, we've got really half a dozen of our favorite woods. And then there's stuff outside of that we'll use.
And what are the combinations? I know, mahogany, spruce, cedar, rosewood, or is it a combination of a lot of them? Just kind of go through like what combinations you love, and then we'll kind of show off your guitars, because that's the cherry part of this interview for me too.
Yeah, I mean, there's for the back and sides, there's the two big camps, which is mahoganies and then rosewoods, and we use mainly Honduran mahogany in the mahogany camp, and then rosewoods. There's so many different. Obviously, I'm getting an echo here. Can you hear that?
You're good now.
Okay.
You all right? Still there?
Yeah.
Yeah, you're good on our end. So I don't know if it's maybe an internet, hiccup or something. But you're good from my end. I can't hear anything. I'll ask Sam. Sam, you hear? Oh, Sam says he hears your echo. That's weird. All right. Do you You want to try and log off and log back on and see if that helps? Your mic is off.
Okay.
It's still there?
Yeah, let me. I can't talk.
Yeah, that's all right. No, you know what? Log off and then log back on and see if that helps. Is that better?
Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you. Can you hear me?
Yes. Okay. I think that's better.
Okay, cool.
All right. Sorry about that.
No worries. It happens all the time. You know, that's the joys of the internet podcast, you know. Sure. We're at the mercy of the internet gods, you know, it just works out that way. It's okay, no problem.
Yeah. Well, where was I? Talking about guitar woods?
You were talking about rosewood, mahogany, and...
So in rosewoods, I mean, there's so many different types of rosewoods. You know, Indian rosewood, the most common, is incredible. Of course, there's Brazilian rosewood. Coca Bola has become like a super popular wood for us. I mean, those are, you know, the most common that we use. And it's funny, for different size guitars, you know, you can use these combinations on anything, but it's just like our SJs, which is our most popular guitar. That's usually some kind of rosewood guitar with the Adirondack spruce top. Our small guitars, that's where, you know, we're more likely to use cedar tops. But, you know, it's all about who we're building the guitar for. And that's the trick, is, you know, if you've got roughly 12 different models of guitars, if you build them all out of the same wood, those 12 different models would all sound different, right?
Right.
So then you think, all right, you take any one of those models and you got all these different wood combinations, you can make an SJ sound 100 different ways with different wood combinations. And so with 12 models and each of them, you can change the sound. I mean, you can build a guitar that's the right guitar for the person. The trick is to figure out what woods they are before you start that guitar. And so that's one of the hard parts of, you know, working with individual customers. But, you know, you start to learn how to do that after.
Well, it's like a careful balance too. It's like the soundboard of a guitar, you know, a lot of people that may not play guitar, the soundboard is the top piece of the guitar, and it is one of the most important. But it is a careful balance how it kind of also works with the back and sides of a guitar. Mm-hmm. Like, do you find when you know, like, is it ever, you're probably at the point now where you look at a piece of wood and you're like, I know how this is going to sound. It's just going to sound.
A lot of, yeah, you definitely, you feel like you know what it's going to sound before you string it up, for sure. You know, and we're not experimenting so much anymore. You know, our SJs, our rosewood spruce SJs sound like our rosewood spruce SJs. I mean, there might be some minor variants if we build them with the same woods, but like some of the artists that we build the same guitar over and over for because they need backups or whatever, their sound guys will say, we don't have to change anything between these instruments. And, you know, that's the way that we like it. Kind of what I was getting at the very beginning of the conversation about, like, you know, when somebody says, build us this a replica of this guitar, and we'd say no. We'd have people that would say, build me, you know, this guitar, but I want it to be more bass and more of this and more of that. And it's, you know, you listen to that, but at some point say, hey, we're going to build the guitar that we're going to build with these.
It's like, why don't you show me the five guitars that you think from what I do would work? And then I'll tell you out of those five, which, like, that makes, because you're the expert. You know what I mean?
You can't taste tone, because one person's going to like this and one person's going to like that. And also, even after all these years, there's like guitars that I would describe as, you know, warm, where somebody else will come and say, that's bright, right? And they're hearing the exact same thing I am. They're just describing it differently.
Right.
So you can't, my advice to any, you know, up and coming luthier is don't chase tone, like, you know, with a million different things. Like, find out what you like and sort of, you know, stand by it.
Well, one of the players, too, that you got one of the biggest acoustic guitar players, Dave Matthews, to play a lot of your guitars. How did that relationship come about? And also, that must have been a little bit nerve-wracking to find the right guitar for him, or did he just gravitate towards it right away? And it's like he's been playing acoustic guitars and some of the biggest acoustic guitars for years, the Martins, the Taylors, and so on, you know? So how did you know that, A, you'd be able to compete because you had to know that you were making better guitars? I can look at your guitars and know that you make better guitars than a lot of the biggest guitar, you know, manufacturers. So how did you know that this he would be the right artist, or how did that relationship come about? Because it's a huge, huge, huge honor, you know?
Yeah. Well, again, you know, guitars are all subjective. Some one person likes one thing, somebody likes the other. But yeah, I mean, I certainly would never want to downplay the amount that he's helped, you know, build our career in a lot of ways. But it started so organically. A friend of mine was working with him, and this is years ago, and a long time ago, and this is somebody I've grown up with, and she basically took a couple guitars out where he was going to see them, and they were small, but it's literally just the two guitars that I had available. I mean, back in those days, this is 15 years ago, we didn't have many like demo models. You know, if we built the guitar, we had to ship it out the door and like wait for the check to, you know, wait for the check to show up. You know, the early days of starting a business are brutal.
Those are the growing pains.
Yeah, and at that point, you know, we had some high profile players outside of bluegrass at that point. I mean, we had, you know, we're building a name for ourselves, but it was two small body guitars. It was a 00 and a 00, and she took them out and said that he had kind of like opened the case and said neat and shut the case. And, you know, I thought, well, these were loaners, you know. It was like, take him out to where he's going to be, bring him back the next weekend. And then just by, we had nothing to do with this. I think I met him a few times at this point, but there some interview came out in a magazine that he had done that weekend. And I hadn't heard anything about his reaction to the guitars, and it was like, you know, an interview about all sorts of stuff, and at the end, sort of as a last question, the guy was like, what do you think about guitars lately, got any new you know things you're playing? And he said, my new favorite guitars, the best guitars I've ever played, are these, you know, two little guitars from a tiny company in Virginia. And that's how I heard about it.
That's awesome.
So he bought those two guitars, and he played those for a while before he played anything on stage. And then we just wanted.
Well, they're smaller than what he usually plays. He usually plays a Dreadnought. I've seen him play some jumbos, but mostly Dreadnoughts most of the time. Yeah,
the O and the double. He's never played those two on stage. But yeah, then we made the SJ, and we've made one or two SJs before that one, but they'd had like cedar tops. But we just you know got it in his hands, and he loved it, and that's how it awesome. All started. So yeah.
Well, let's show off these guitars because I've been waiting and I've been eyeing these pictures. We're just going to throw up a guitar and we're going to have you describe the woods and kind of what went into making it. So
yeah, Sam, when you ask, okay, so you're just pulling pictures off the site. That was a jumbo. So we hadn't built too many jumbos before. We'd actually, and then I built a jumbo for John Russell from The Head and the Heart, another great band. And hadn't delivered it yet, and Dave played it and was like, why don't I have a jumbo? And then he trimmed out this jumbo. I mean, it was, you know, his idea, let's make it black, it's ebony binding. So that is maple back and sides with the Adirondack spruce top. It's obviously all black with a like black verse ebony binding. Really cool. Maple tends to be, in my opinion, super duper bright. But when you get into this size guitar, like a big guitar, it all of a sudden mellows out, and it's a really, really pretty sounding wood.
That's awesome. Let's go to the next one, Sam.
Oh my gosh, I love Brandi Carlile's music. That is an an all mahogany 00, which is one of our most popular models. We build a lot of those. And when I say all mahogany, I mean, it's got a mahogany top, which I would describe as almost like, you know, you put new strings on a guitar and it sounds so zingy. And then like a week later, they kind of mellow out. That's kind of how a mahogany top is. It just mellows the guitar out. They work really well plugging in. And we've built this for so many different artists and different genres of music. But yeah, that's the only purple one we've built. She wanted a purple one, and awesome. That's her tattoo is inlaid on the peg head there. But that was a really cool guitar.
That's a nice touch. And this, you said it's an ebony neck, I assume, ebony fingerboard.
Ebony fingerboard, yeah.
And I like the inlay, mother of pearl around the sound hole and around the whole guitar.
That's abalone, yep, around the sound hole and cool. The trim around the body.
Very cool. Let's show another one.
Warren Haynes, one of my favorite guitar players. I used to transcribe his solos when I was in high school because I was such an Allman Brothers fan.
Me too, man.
Yeah, dude.
You're gonna love it. You know, we just filmed Sight and Sound episode 9, and I don't know if you know Greg Cock Marshall Trio. Mm-hmm. Oh man, he is one of the best. He's one of the best living guitarists. And we did an Allman Brothers episode. So we did You Don't Love Me and Blue Sky, and wow. we had the two drummers. It was one of the best, and we did it at Sunset Sound. So that's coming down the line. I love that you love the Allman Brothers. They're one of my favorites, and they have some of the best acoustic sounds too. Tell me what this guitar is.
I mean, that's our most popular model. You know, that's the one that Dave really made popular for us. That's the small jumbo SJ. Warren's was Coca-Cola back and sides and a Red Spruce top, and I'd lent him guitars for a while. It's in the early days. That's what I used to do. You know, you lend an artist a guitar, and then you don't have to like make a sale. I mean, I hate being a salesman. So it's, you know, hey, if you like it, you can buy it, and if you don't, you can give it back to us. It takes the pressure off because then, you know, they can look at the guitar and play it when you're not standing in front of them. And that's how it worked with a lot of our bigger clients.
That's but cool.
He'd been borrowing guitars for a while. And then he did an acoustic album up in New York, and they were running low on acoustics. And I went up there and he ended up, I think, putting 6 rock bridges on the acoustic album, which is so awesome. So he bought 2 of those, and then he had us build that SJ. So it was, you know,
it's tobacco burst. It looks like tobacco burst, correct?
We don't have names for the bursts. We, you know, now the way it works is we have enough bursts out there that if somebody orders a guitar, I say, you know, send us a picture of your favorite burst, and then we go with it. But that's, I mean, awesome. That's a little bit more of a yellow burst than I would call our standard. But it's pretty cool instrument.
All right, let's show the next one.
That's Keith Urban. That's the same guitar as Brandy Carlisle's. It's just not purple. That's an all mahogany 00.
Same size too?
Same size, yep.
Wow. Looks way smaller on him.
Yeah. And that was a nerve-wracking sale for me. I mean, this is many years ago. You know, some of these artists, you know, I you know, make you know, become friends with and have a long relationship before you build the guitars. But like in this case, I got connected to him through his guitar tech, and it was like a one day deal. I just showed up. He was at Bridgestone Arena rehearsing for a show. And so it was full volume. And I mean, I wasn't expecting this at all. It was full volume. And I had this demo guitar that was, you know, available for sale. We build demo guitars. You know, a lot of these artists, if they're interested in a new instrument, they can't wait a year and a half. So got to have a couple things there. And he got off soundcheck. I mean, I met him, and 1 second later he was strumming it, and he really liked it, but he was like, let's plug it in. And, you know, I've learned my lesson since then. I didn't have a pickup in it. He was like, doesn't have a pickup. Well, I can't use this. And I said, okay, I'll bring it back tomorrow with the pickup in it. So I got a pickup.
Did you put an LR bags or something?
that it was a Fishman Matrix in his.
Okay.
Came back the next day, and he literally did like an A-B test with the guitar he'd been playing, full volume, and he had a cord that was like 100 feet long. So he came out, stood in the middle of the arena. So it was just him and me and like the guitar tech out by the sound booth, and he would play one of them full volume and then plug it into the other. And, you know, this is a long time ago.
That's wild.
I was just sitting there like, teeth chattering, but then he loved it and he bought that one. And then he bought, and then we ended up building him two more, one exactly like it, and then a 12-string version.
Wow. Same model, same size.
The one was a 00 all mahogany, and then the 12-string was a 00 all mahogany, same woods. Yeah.
Let's show one more picture. Let's show one more picture. Tell me about this one.
Jason Mraz, that was a that's a slope shoulder, and that was with rosewood, I believe Indian rosewood and red spruce. And yeah, that's a really cool model. I mean, it's roughly shaped on like a J35, you know, roughly based on that. We love those. We don't build enough of them, but whenever somebody orders one of those, we're super happy with it.
And what a beautiful guitar. My bass player actually plays with Jason, but I love that. What kind of burst is that? Is that cherry burst? I mean, I know you don't call it that, but
it's... You know, that's like a Calhoun burst. That's back when I sprayed sunburst. I haven't sprayed one in 10 or 15 years now. Adam, who sprays them, is way better at it than I ever was. But mine were always so small and tight like that. That was a long time ago. But yeah, I mean, he's an incredible musician and songwriter and such a nice guy too.
Well, I want to just go through. I'm gonna have to visit your factory and just go through your guitars and just check them all out sometime. You should start doing tours, man, because I know a lot of people will want to check these out. Where can people find you and Rockbridge Guitars, like either online, or where's the easiest place for somebody to purchase one of these guitars?
I mean, they got to get in touch with us. So, you know, and it's the website, and I still talk to every customer.
That's awesome.
It's just a really cool thing. So, you know, I mean, I get a lot of emails, you know, a lot of people asking that never go anywhere, but, you know, like you said at the very beginning with James Goodall, I mean, even this year, I've sold several guitars, like I got a lot of guitars where they inquired like over a decade ago, you know,
wow.
And then they think about it and come back in.
Well, I'm going to tell you, and you're going to have it on record, I'm going to buy one of your guitars.
All right, man.
It won't take as long as my conversation with James Goodall, but I'm going to tell you, your guitars are works of magic. They're works of art. And I want to bring you back on the show in about 9-10 months because you're going to have more guitars and we're going to talk more stories about making guitars. But where can people find you if they want to find you online on Instagram or your Rockbridge Guitar website?
Yeah, just at Rockbridge Guitar and just rockbridgeguitar.com. Shoot me a message. We'll build you one.
There you go. You heard it from the man himself. On behalf of Brian Calhoun, myself, and Sam, we'll see you guys next week. Thanks for tuning in. Check out Rockbridge Guitars. They are one of the best guitars on the planet. I mean it. And I will own one soon, Brian. You have it on tape, all right?
All right, man. I really appreciate it.
Thanks so much for being a guest on Wake Up Hollywood. Peace, love, and hair grease. We'll see you guys next week. Cheers and party on.
You're listening to Wake Up Hollywood with Nikki Corulla and Eddie Pence, right here on LA Talk Radio.